When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous, infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always,
is me, Brian K. Reese.
Are you sure?
I think so.
I think I'm going to leave that pause in there.
You should.
Well, here we are. This has been...
It's hard.
It is. This has been a difficult one to record. Because nature apparently hates me.
Well, it pours a vacuum.
Yeah. So the last two times, last two times we've tried to sit down, there have been massive storms which have knocked out all my power. So I guess, I don't know. The forces of nature hate my podcasting.
They just hate the comic books.
No, I know. No, no. I'll take full blame for that.
Maybe it was a monster or monstrous that was knocking out the...
It could be. And it...
Oh!
Funny you should mention that, because today on the program, we'll be discussing the 2015 fantasy series Monstrous by Marjorie Liu with art by Sana Takeda. Is it Takeda or Takeda?
I was going with Takeda.
Let's go with Takeda.
I'm sure someone will correct us if we're wrong.
Potato, patata. Takeda, Takata. So anyway, yes, we're going to be discussing a Monstrous, which...
all the whole thing off. All right, good. Sorry, go ahead.
No problem. So yes, we're going to be discussing Monstrous, which is, of course, a fantasy comic, and we haven't done... How many fantasy comics have we done? Well, I guess they're all technically.
All comics are fantasy.
Yes.
I mean, well, maybe, you know, Harvey Pekar might disagree with us.
I don't know. There's some fantasy elements.
Comics are fantastic.
That's true. But anyway, in the genre, the fantasy, using fantasy tropes and or things that make it fantasy.
Which then are fantasy.
Exactly. So anyway, how many of those have we done? We did the Rock Candy Mountain, which was a fantasy comic.
Sort of. But not to be confused with the non-fantasy fantasy where you have someone with superpowers flying around through space.
Well, that's just, that's hyper-reality. Anywho, so before we get into our main topic, we're going to discuss some of the fantasy comics that we actually really enjoy. But first, I want to give a shout out to The Collective. We are now part of The Collective. It's a group of comic book podcasters who just kind of share ideas and share each other's podcasts. And there's possibility for crossovers and maybe some guest appearances. So. We were asked to join that very recently, and I was very excited to do so. I will be playing some trailers of members of The Collective, and we're going to have some links up on the website eventually when I actually do it.
Now, this isn't the Borg, right?
No, but resistance is futile, just in general.
I've found that often in my life, particularly when you're married.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some fantasy comics.
Okay.
Would you like to begin? Now, again, ladies and gentlemen, I said, let's do three each, and Brian came up with nine.
Well, I could list nine, and we'll talk about my top three.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's hard, because you do three, and then you think of all the things you're leaving out.
Exactly. And, it's totally understandable, because, to be honest, I came up with four. So.
Uh-huh, so you cheated too.
I did. I felt bad that I went to four, and then you told me nine. So begin. What is a fantasy comic that you are particularly fond of?
Well, let me just do my list.
Okay.
Well, let me do my bottom list. So the ones that didn't make the top three, how about that? I'm just going to throw them out there.
That's
so I
great.
Can acknowledge that they exist, but we don't have to talk about them.
Fantastic.
So what did not make my top three... Or Saga, Descender, Moonshadow, Grendel, Warlord, and Gru.
Those are all great. Warlord did not make the top three.
You know, but it could have.
Yeah.
If I made this list tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. This is all very much
Warlord
subjective.
Might end up in the top three. It just depends, you know. And some of these you could argue, are they, what is fantasy, you know, what isn't fantasy, is, you know, so, you know, someone would be like, how come Saga isn't in the top three? It's the greatest comic that has ever been made in the history of all comic books. Well, it didn't make the top three, you know, and it's not done yet.
Exactly.
Same with Descender. Descender and now Ascender is great comics, but it's still going. We don't know, like, the full scope of it. It's sci-fi more than, you know, swords and sorcery, but it's sci-fi is fantasy. So,
I'm glad you say that, because I have something on my list that could fall into either category, but I think it's mostly fantasy.
Right. I mean, you know, it's everybody can quibble, you know, and we could pull up our Wikipedia pages and our Sci-Fi-pedia and our Fantasy-pedia pages, and, you know, but I would do anything that's fantastical in nature, and so I include sci-fi in that as well.
I agree with that. And again, this is completely our opinions, and this isn't really, you know.
We're picking favorites.
Yeah, this isn't a sort of a definitive list.
We're not saying best.
Exactly.
We're not making, you know, qualitative assumptions on, you know, we're saying, these are our three favorites, or these are our top favorites. You know, your mileage may vary, and that's okay. We're all special sunflowers.
Indeed. Is there a fantasy comic about people who are actually sunflowers?
I imagine there probably is.
And if there isn't, there's going to be one.
If not, there's certainly a book out there. I'm sure, like, Piers Anthony wrote something about people being sunflowers. Or Roald Dahl. I mean, not people being Roald Dahl, but Roald Dahl.
That would be hilarious. An entire race of people who are Roald Dahl.
Or Roald Dahl. I imagine they'd be very unpleasant.
Absolutely.
By all accounts. But
yes. Brilliant storytelling, a little bit of racism.
Yeah. Just a smidge.
Just a smidge. Well, let's talk about actual comics.
Those were my didn't make the cut, but acknowledging, you know,
yeah,
so that, you know, nobody has a, you know, blows a gasket over the matter. So my top three in descending order, 1 through 3, would be ElfQuest, Bone, and then Sandman.
Ooh, Sandman. You know what? I had completely forgotten about Sandman. I don't know.
It's just this little comic. I was going to say, it's easy to forget about Sandman. It's this kind of obscure comic. Writer never amounted to much.
I know. Yeah. It really flew under the radar. No, I guess Sandman, I always kind of put Sandman in its own, I don't know, its own little bubble. It's, you know, its own little pedestal, I guess. but it is very much a fantasy comic. Wow.
Yes. Quintessentially, in many ways, particularly when it's myth. Mythology tends to play heavily into fantasy, or vice versa. So,
yes, the comics that I chose are Coda. It's a current ongoing series right now from Boom. Savage Sword of Conan, not the current one running, but the actual 1970s magazine style.
The real Conan.
Yes, the real Conan. I don't know. Have you ever seen the artwork of that on Savage Sword?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course you have. But just if you look at the list of people who worked on that comic, of course, it was written by Roy Thomas.
Most of it, yeah.
Most of it. But you had Neil Adams and Barry Windsor Smith, John Buscema, Jim Starlin, Walter Simonson worked on it for a little while. I mean, geez, that is a who's who.
Right. And all those makes sense, you know, when you think about it, when you think about their later work too. And
oh yeah, exactly.
Did Frazetta do any Conan work?
Frazetta did a lot of covers.
Yeah.
Yeah, some cover work. But he didn't actually do any of the, you know, sequential.
He's not a guy for interiors, but
No. Or animation for that matter. Oh, there's a lot of people who are gonna be angry at me.
He also struggled with, anatomical correctness.
It is quintessentially fantasy. Oh, anyway, so my final fantasy pick might be a controversial one. I don't know. It's Star Wars.
You're wrong. Okay.
Am I? No. I'm not wrong. It's princesses and wizards And it's a fantasy story that just has spaceships in it.
I mean, you know, the Jedi and the Sith are sorcerers, basically.
You know. Yeah. Well, it's King Arthur. It's King Arthur. A fantasy, a farm boy finds a magical sword, has a wizard tutor, you know, has a little bit of a relationship weirdness go on in his life.
Are you sure this isn't H.R. Puffin stuff?
H.R. Puffin stuff. I could argue that H.R. Puffin stuff is King Arthur as well.
Right. Well, you know, the young boy finds the magic flute. Wait, which one is that? Never mind. And he comes of age playing his magic flute.
That's how he knows he's a man. Can't do a little because he can't do enough. So anyway, do you want to discuss each one of these?
Well, we can't. I mean, it's, I don't know what to, how much to say, you know. I mean, looking at mine, it's, I think that ElfQuest is, I picked ElfQuest because, you know, the Richard and Wendy Pini did just the level of world building, and that's probably not the last time I'm going to use that phrase in this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's sequential, and it's serialized, and everything builds upon each other. And this was done, you know, at a time in which nobody was really doing this. I mean, I know Savage Sword of Conan, and there was some other things going on, but the heft and weight of the amount of work in ElfQuest and the world that was created and the deep characterization, and there were even some naughty bits in it. I remember as a kid, I was like, look, Mom, I'm reading ElfQuest. It's completely innocent. And, you know, then you look inside and they'd be like, oh, this is a boob.
I had more. Yeah. So I know what you're saying. Like, there was a lot of like the barbarian style comics. Warlord fits into that as well.
Right.
As well as Conan. But Conan, not Conan. He was the redheaded barbarian. But ElfQuest was much more of a high.
Not to be confused with Cohen the Barbarian from Discworld.
That's right. Yeah, but ElfQuest fit more into like a high fantasy type.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's, to me, it's like, it's quintessential, you know, fantasy. And it was very, it was something that I just really loved reading when I was younger. And I have been tempted to go back and try to reread it again. It was recently kind of rebooted a little bit. There was like a, I guess in music you'd call it a slight return. It just, to me, it sort of, for me, it stands on the pinnacle in terms of what I like and my favorite in the fantasy realm. It's still, the memories I have of it are still pretty strong. And so for me, that's why ElfQuest was at the top of my list. And then with Bone is just joyous in so many ways, and the work that Jeff Smith did on it, I think, will stand for centuries is hard to say. I mean, you know, but it will stand for a long period of time. And again, like, the characters are so relatable and so likable, like, you know, the brothers. And so I just think, you know, and people are always like, oh, that's kid stuff too. And oh, yeah, it's not really kid stuff. I mean, it is, but it isn't. It's like Pixar movies. You can read it as an adult, or you can watch or read it as an adult and appreciate it on a different level than you would as a kid. And again, Sandman, I don't think there's really not much that needs to be said there. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and haven't read Sandman, you're probably not listening to this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I had completely forgotten about Sandman as a fantasy comic. Because I don't know, I just sort of see it as, you know, kind of a...
You've got witches and you've got...
I know, but I see it... I guess I see Gaiman more as horror, but that's not right.
But horror skirts around the fantasy. You know, fantasy and horror skirt, you know, kind of play around each other as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Not straight up horror, not like, you know, a Stephen King horror novel, but...
A Stephen King horror novel kind of skirts on fantasy as well.
Right.
What is, you know what? We can just get into this right now. Classification of genre is just ridiculous.
Bingo.
I do another podcast with a
you.
Yeah, I do with another fella. Sorry, Ryan. But it's on writing.
Are you cheating on me?
Kind of. It's called Word After Word, a podcast on writing. in case anyone wants to listen to that. But we get into this all the time because David uses the, my co-host David uses the term literary fiction all the time. And I despise that so much. As if all other genres are not literary. And being a comic book apologist, I always have to say, but that's literature too. And that's always just been a pet peeve of mine that when you say fantasy, you lose 90% of the people who are going to be your audience.
Right.
You know, because they think sword and sandals and wizards with big hats.
But which in and of themselves is not necessarily a bad thing.
Oh, no, not at all. But at the same time, you know, Gabriel Garcia Marquez wrote fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, magical realism, but...
That's fantasy. That's what that is. But exactly what you just did there and said, well,
magical realism is right up there with, you know, literary fiction in terms of labeling.
I agree. You know, there's so many things that fall into different genres. Now, I get it for classification and where to shelve it on your bookshelf. I get it. You need to have, you know, you put your science fiction and you have your fantasy and you have your mysteries and so forth. But genres are so malleable and they fade in and out of one another constantly.
I think like we might have mentioned this before, but both Paula and I actually met working in Denver at a, let's say, moderately famous bookstore in Denver. And yep. At one point we were both buyers for different sections in the place, but you know, there was always this conflict, and I was a genre fiction buyer, and there was always conflict. And I remember I would talk to the fiction buyer and we would talk amongst ourselves, and we would have a lot of bleed with some of the authors, where we both felt that the fiction buyer thought that the book should be in fiction. And I said, no, the book should be here in my section, maybe just because I like the author and wanted to keep track of it either way. But, you know, there were numerous titles that we had that we ended up agreeing to sort of cross shelf. So yeah. Again, you know, it's like, so when you're talking about like where you want to put something on your bookshelves, you could play around a little bit, but at the end of the day, you're going to put the D&D choose your own adventure stuff in sci-fi fantasy or what have you. And you probably won't shelve it, you know, next to James Joyce.
But see, I think
a bookstore for people to find stuff that they're specifically looking for.
Exactly. That's, I mean, as far as, you know, someone coming in and trying to find what they're looking for, I understand that. But I, you know, we could get into this whole argument too, but I think that Tolkien should be put is a literary fiction writer.
See, and I always wanted to shelve it in hiking.
Ha ha. See, that's kind of funny because they walk a lot. We should just do a podcast on us yelling at each other over the Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Ring, pros and cons.
We could write songs about it.
Yes. And tell epic tales and write poetry. Lots and lots of poetry.
Lots and lots of poetry.
And it's glorious. Every word of it is glorious. But we are not a Lord of the Rings podcast.
No.
No.
No, we are not.
not much of a chance of that ever happening.
It's unlikely.
Okay.
But, although I think that you, Paul, should do a Lord of the Rings podcast.
Oh, there's way too many people out there already doing one that's much more knowledgeable than I am.
And really, it's... Is anybody going to beat Stephen Colbert at it?
Anyway, if you want to have a little recommendation from me, there is the Tolkien professor. Corey Olson does a podcast. It's absolutely wonderful. Deep dive into the Lord of the Rings and all the mythology and how it was written. It's really great. But that is something Brian will never, ever listen to.
Nope. No, no, sir.
But see, I listen to it all the time. In fact, you might say I make it a hobbit to listen to.
How long have you been waiting to say
that? It's been a long time. Anyway, I think we've exhausted this conversation. It went in a place I didn't expect it to go.
Yeah, but you never really talked about your... So you have Star Wars.
Oh, Star Wars.
I think we both agree Star Wars, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Now, Coda is a... I talked about this at our year-end recommendations as well.
I remember you, yeah.
Yeah, it's written by Cy Spurrier with art by Matthias Bergara. Is that his name? Bergara? Again, me, not pronouncing names correctly. Anyway, it's an ongoing fantasy novel. It's kind of like a post-apocalyptic fantasy. Picture Mad Max, except it's in a fantasy realm. It's really good.
All right.
And Cy Spurrier is a fabulous writer. Great art. And I want to do just a little minor shout out to Man Thing, because no, Steve Gerber. Now, mostly it falls into the horror genre, but Steve Gerber was a writer who could not stay away from fantasy elements, like talking ducks,
yeah,
and barbarian warriors created out of peanut butter. These are things that happen in Man Thing. It's wonderful, and there happens to be a podcast about Man Thing if you want to listen to it.
Is there?
Yeah. It's by a guy named, hold on, let me check my notes. Oh, it's me. Nexus of All Realities, people. Go listen to that too. Wow, I'm doing all kinds of recommendations.
I know.
That was not intended, but.
Someday we'll be able to recommend Outhouse Moon, but we'll leave that as a mystery for now.
Ooh, I wasn't sure whether to bring that up or not.
Well, we could bring it up. We just can't really say anything about it yet.
Brian is working on a project of his very own, hopefully to be released in the near future.
Hopefully.
Okay.
Since I just scrapped it all the other day and started over.
That's how it works.
That is.
Okay. So you know what? We're rambling now. Let's just take a break. And when we come back, we will talk about Monstrous.
We shall indeed.
Hi, this is Chris.
And this is Brian.
And we are the hosts of Inner Demons, the Ghost Rider podcast.
And you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcast apps for all your Ghost Rider needs.
Right on.
And we're back. Paul, I believe the selection, our reading selection today was chosen by you. Would you like to talk about it and tell us a little bit about why you chose this particular bit of fictional enjoyment?
I sure will. Monstrous is a fantasy comic written by Marjorie Liu with art by Sana Takeda. It's filled with intricate world-building, complex characters, and stunning art that's some of the best being produced in comics today. And if that's all Monstrous was, that would be remarkable enough. But Monstrous is something quite a bit more. It's set in a world of magic and war, populated by humans, immortal beings, hybrid creatures, and many-tailed scholarly cats. Monstrous follows the story of Mecha Halfwolf, a teenage arcanic girl who passes for human but also shares a psychic connection with an ancient demon, as she sets off on an adventure to find her true origins and her mother's possibly nefarious motivations as she comes to grips with the darkness inside her, all the while she is relentlessly pursued by the Kumiya, an order of sorceresses who consume archaic essence to fuel their power. At this point, I want to stop and state, for the record, fantasy stories are awesome. But what makes Monstrous stand out from the typical fantasy fare is the fact that it's populated almost entirely by women. Women are the heroes, women are the villains, women are the bystanders, women are the common folk, women are everything. It's common enough today to say that a work subverts its genre, but Monstrous does more than simply subvert the genre, it redefines it. It takes common tropes, used not only in fantasy but in literature in general, and doesn't simply turn them on their heads, but it throws them away entirely. This is a story written by women about women, and it tells a wildly entertaining story with female characters that are diverse, complex individuals. And it doesn't simply address misrepresentation of women in comics, it moves beyond it. Monstrous, to put it plainly, is something special. What did you think of this comic, Brian?
Oh, I think it was fantastic. So I think you made your intro, of course, set up a lot of our talking points. I couldn't agree more with your summation, and particularly how great this comic is. And when it first came out, I wasn't reading it at the time. It suffered. Like a lot of, especially Image comics now, which seems to be, there's so many of them coming out, and you got to pick and choose. So I slept on Monstrous, which, to my regret, although, you know, there's this lovely thing called Trades now, which has been a godsend. And I'm actually picked it up finally, I think, shortly before you started talking about maybe recommending this. So this is, it's been a good, I think, almost a year or so that you've been talking about wanting to do Monstrous. So I was able to finally pick it up and start reading it prior to your recommendation, which thankfully I did. So I just, it really is an incredible piece of work. And when you say visually stunning, that's not even, that's the tip of the iceberg on how incredible the art is.
It really is. I thought about, there's three different takes we can discuss on this comic. First of all, the fantasy story and world building. Just straightforward storytelling, the art, which is, you know, just fabulous, and then of course there's the underlying themes of feminism and empowerment and so forth. But I did the same thing where this had been coming out and it had gotten some praise and some accolades in the beginning, but I really wasn't reading it until the first trade was released, and then that's when I picked it up, and I've been reading it monthly ever since, because that first the one we read today just blew me away. Wow, yeah. This is so different from what's being put out in mainstream comics. You know, it seems like a straightforward fantasy story on the surface, but there's so much going on. We're not even going to touch on half of what's happening in this story.
Yeah, I think plot is the plot is, it would be difficult for us to really get into the intricacies of the plot because there's so much of it.
Oh yeah.
I mean, again, you used a world building, and I used it earlier, and that's what Marjorie Liu is doing in this with her script is, she's building this incredibly complex world and the relationships within it. I have to confess, there's times I have a hard time keeping track of who's who.
Only in the same way that
in War and Peace, you have to try to keep track of who's who. Or in any great piece of work that encapsulates such a large world, and all of the, you know, there's the palace intrigues, there's just so much going on, which makes it a joy to reread.
Oh yeah, exactly. Once you get to the end of the story, and then you go back and read it again, you now that you know who you're introduced to all the characters slowly, and once you figure out who they are, you can read it again and see what all their machinations are and what their motivations are.
Yeah. I mean, I get a lot of comics where, you know, I read it one time and I enjoy it, but there's never a lot of, like, the superhero stuff that's serialized. It's, you read it, there's not a lot of need to go back and reread, which is kind of sad in some ways, but this is one where you want to.
Yeah, I agree. And there's so much, you know, great fantasy world building builds a history, and a nuanced history. It doesn't just say, and then in the third age, this happened. You know, it gets into the nitty gritty of what happened to the people, and you know, what adventures did everybody have, and how did it affect commoners on this, you know, in the villages and so forth. And
thank goodness for Professor Tam Tam.
Professor Tam Tam, the many-tailed scholarly cat I mentioned. Isn't that a wonderful little device? Because basically, if anyone hasn't read this, there's a race of cats with lots of tails who are also scholars and poets because fantasy. But they do these massive info dumps of what's going on in the guise of a classroom setting. Professor Cat teaching student cats. It sounds so silly to say out loud. But he teaches them the history of the world and what's going on. And it's a great way for us to get all this information and absorb it, and, you know, and have little cats telling us.
Right. And done in a semi-humorous manner. Yeah. Actually, in some cases, not semi-humorous. But also, it's a way to, it fills in the blanks. And these are one-panel things at the end of each comic. But it fills in the history blanks rather than having sort of the generic exposition mid-comic. You know,
yeah, and in a typical fantasy
with the
type story,
balloon where, you know, Captain America tells us the entire history of something as he's fighting.
Yeah, I remember back in 1942.
Right,
but in a typical fantasy, even, not just a comic, but in novels, when it's done poorly, the whole story will stop you say, now let me recount the history of our world.
It's like if you've been walking a long time and you stop to have lunch and you tell the history of the entire world in a poem.
That's a... Oh, see, you don't understand the subtlety and nuance of the fabulous Tolkien. Okay. I'm not going to get into this argument because you're deeply, deeply wrong about that novel.
We're just... There seems to be a different undercurrent running through all of this, and that's my fault.
Listeners should know that Brian and I have known each other 20 years, 25 years?
Somewhere around
that. And we have an ongoing argument over The Lord of the Rings. Just, it's been going on for so long.
And we've been really good about not bringing it into the, you know, until today.
Yeah, until today, but, you know.
Because we're talking fantasy. And we're talking about a great comic that does it well.
Yes, we are. So, you know, the story itself, the actual story itself is pretty straightforward, you know, and bear with me. Yeah, it's a quest, exactly. Maika, and I hope I assume it's pronounced Maika, the main character. She is of, there are different races. There's human, and then there's magical, and then there are hybrids between the two, which are called archaics. And she is an archaic. Most of them have animalistic appearances, you know, like a fox.
Of varying degrees.
Of varying degrees. Maika looks like a human, so she's able to pass as a human. But inside of her is embedded an ancient demon with tentacles and eyeballs.
It's tentacles done well.
So, you know, straightforward, she's possessed by a demon, and she's trying to find out how this came to be.
Right.
Has something to do with her mother, and has something to do with this group of human sorceresses. So she's just trying to figure that out. And that's essentially what the quest is her journey to try to figure out what it is that happened to her and what it's all about. And it's,
you know, as they're called, you know, they're the old gods.
Exactly.
And, you know, the assumption is the monster inside her, which is one of the, not quite the most subtle, but, you know, the idea is that the monster inside her is potentially one of the old gods, and maybe the most powerful of the old gods.
Yeah, it's very Lovecraftian.
Yes.
In appearance and the idea of it. Yeah, but it's also a metaphor for the darkness inside her that she needs to come to grips with. It's all just such good writing. I like it. When you have a fantasy story, when it's done well, everything is a metaphor and an allegory. You tell these great adventure stories, but you're able to tap into different things that a typical, straightforward, realistic story can't. You can get into so much inner detail, and it's such a great genre that I think is maligned. But when you have a story like this, that there's, you know, it's so entertaining, and it's a really good story, but at the same time, it's saying a lot without saying it directly. So anyway, I threw you off. What were you going to say?
What particular? So for you, Paul, like reading this, what particular underlying themes? What are the themes that strike you the most in this comic?
Well, the first, you know, obviously it's what I talked about in the synopsis is the, and I'm reluctant to call it feminism, but it's just sort of taking a woman-centric position on a story like this. There's a thing called, I'm gonna butcher this, but it's called the Smurfette principle, because in stories like this, it's in stories like this, you get, you know, it's populated by men, and they're all diverse men, and they have different, you know, have their own characteristics, and they're nuanced, and they're subtle in their depictions, and then you have one or two women in a story like this. You see it in action films, you see it in comic books, you see it everywhere, and it's called the Smurfette principle because you have all these Smurfs and there's one girl. So this takes that idea and turns it around.
Right.
So it's populated almost entirely by women, and every woman in this is nuanced and different, and has are genuine real characters. And then every once in a while you see a guy who's, you know, he's either the bumbling fool,
the bumbling village idiots,
or the big burly guy. And it's I find that fascinating. I mean, and this is, I mean, I'm not just reading into this. Marjorie Liu has said she consciously chose to do that. She's, I'm going to take this story and and structure it in that way. Yeah.
Well, it's a conscious decision. It would be nice when we get to the point someday where it doesn't even have to be like a conscious decision of flipping the script, as it were. It's one of the things, and you notice it right away. And again, like what you're saying is, it's every character is, you have some of the characters do just intensely horrible, horrifying things. There is some pretty extreme violence and some pretty disturbing scenes.
Oh, it's horrifically violent
in this comic, and child beheadings, and
yeah. But at the same time, like if we look at our last comic, The Boys, the violence in that comic was gratuitous and done there specifically to shock you. Whereas in Monstrous, the violence is horrible and it's terrible, but it's germane to the story that's being told. There's a huge difference between the violence in those two comics.
Well, and it's the violence in The Boys is cartoonish. There's really not anything cartoonish about Monstrous.
Oh no. So yes, this is not for the weak of heart. There are some depictions of like horrible violence, as we said, but there's also surprising tenderness, especially between, you know, a girl and her demon.
And the demon inside her can actually be kind of funny.
I think he's fantastic. It's like, it's most of the time he can't even be bothered. It's like, why are you waking me up for this?
Yeah. You know, I keep waiting for the demon in his internal monologue, or he can be heard. He can be heard by a few of by Micah, of course, but also yeah. By Kippa, who is the young fox girl that Micah takes under her wing. But you know, I keep waiting for the demon to utter, "What fresh hell is this?" You know,
it's a surprisingly lackadaisical demon.
Yes.
You expect these things to be, you know, thundering and, you know, I'm going to take over the world. And Mars like, I just really want to go to sleep.
Well, now that I'm awake, I'm hungry.
Exactly. There's a none too subtle, the other theme going on, of course, the sorceress is the Kumiya, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. They are sort of the government, you know, who are running the human aspect. And they have this propaganda campaign to demonize the archaic people. And, you know, there are some parallels going on in the real world that they might be trying to satirize.
I mean, a
government putting out information, demonizing another group of people who live right. Just across a border wall.
Yeah. I mean, there's also, you know, religion, of course, is also being sent up a bit here as well. So yeah. It's government and religion. I mean, you know,
Well, using religion to solidify power. Yeah, so there's that's what I'm talking about. There's so much going on here. It's there's politics, there's religion, there's social ideas. How do people interact with one another in the different communities? Because they travel through different communities, and how the residents of those areas are treated by the various political organizations and so forth. It's trying to say a lot in a very short amount of time, but it does it in such a deft way that it's not overpowering.
No, it feeds it serves the plot. It serves
the plot.
It serves to move the story forward. And this is a rather quick moving story.
Yes. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it is character centric. There's a lot of characters, but there's very few main characters.
Right.
And we focus in on them. We get really deep into the main characters so that we know who they are and what their motivations are. And we know that they make mistakes and they don't always say or do the right thing, which always makes for a great story.
Well, there's nobody in the story. There are very few characters in the story that would be considered pure, if such a word is even useful. You think Kippa, the fox girl, but there's something going on with her as well, because she can hear the demon and see it where others can't.
Exactly.
And that is addressed, without giving too much away, that is addressed a little later on in further volumes.
Yeah. I am actually current. Like I said, I'm reading this monthly, so I am current to what the state of the story is right now. It is an ongoing story, but a lot of that's for later. We want to I just want to focus on this one, one arc.
But you know, there's also a great betrayal at the end of this arc that I did not see coming.
No, I didn't see that coming either. Is this a story? Because a lot of people aren't reading this one on an ongoing basis, I don't think. So I don't know how much spoilers we want to give away on this.
Well, I mean, we don't have to. I think, yeah, I don't know what the sales are for it. I know it's critically adored, and I think it's doing well enough that,
It won an Eisner, I believe.
Yes, yeah, it won an Eisner. I was it for the interiors? I think it was for the art. I can't remember.
It had to have won for the art, because we got to talk about that. The art in this is just, the word I use is stunning. It's amazing. It's intricate and detailed and beautiful. It's steampunk Art Nouveau. It's glorious.
Yeah, and kudos to the coloring as well, which also helps set the tone. It's beautifully colored. I mean, they're dark tones generally,
but it has the way that it feels is sort of almost vintage. It's not really, you know, like sepia tone, just not like that. But it's sort of it has a vintage worn feel to it. If that makes sense.
No. I think that's a good way to describe it. It's ornate. I mean, it's incredible. Like you said, detailed, incredibly ornate, incredibly detailed. I think that's why, you know, the comic doesn't really manage to come out monthly. Yeah. And I don't think that matters. I don't care about that.
I say I read it monthly. I read it when it comes out.
Yeah. People get very fussy about that kind of thing. And I get it. You know, if I would rather Takeda have all the time in the world to craft this. It's you couldn't build this world without visual depth that Takeda brings to this story.
It adds so much to the story, because you know there's a history there, because just the way the fabrics are embroidered. And, you know, everything has a history to it. So, and that is displayed in the art. You know, it's conveyed in the art.
And there's a lushness to it.
Lush is a great word. This is a real world that's lived in, and there's a lot going on. And you can see every page, every panel, you can just pour over and find all the little details and all the little nuances that are in it. You know, that's what you said before, like giving her all the time in the world to complete a book. Yes, I'm all on board with that. There are some, you know, like when we talk about superhero comics, I get a little annoyed when there are delays on your typical everyday superhero comic. But those things don't have the amount of detail that's going on in Monsters. No,
not generally. And when you do have an artist that does, some artists just need more time than other artists. And, you know, everybody's like, oh, well, you know, Jack Kirby could draw 500 comic books in a month and what have you. And I'm like, yeah, but those comics were not as detailed. You know, there was nothing going on in the background in some of those panels. You know, it was a different time and a different style. And you know, this isn't anything against Jack Kirby. And, you know, when he went on and did his New Gods and stuff like that, when he got really detailed and really kind of,
absolutely. You can't compare what was happening in the 60s to what's happening today, and the amount of detail and the amount of realistic tones and there's a lot going on.
Yeah. And some artists, I'm just like, some artists take longer. They just do. And if I see that that artist is attached to a project, I'm like, they're going to try monthly, but they probably won't make it.
I use the word annoyed. That's not the word. It's disappointed, because I want to read the story. Yeah, so that's the only reason. When something's delayed, like say, I don't know, an event comic about a clock that was supposed to be over months ago, that can be a little annoying.
But when it's Monstrous.
Exactly. But yes, so if nothing else, even if you don't like the story, which I don't understand why you wouldn't, but even if you're not even reading it for the story, just flip through any issue, and it's just wonderful to look at.
And it's where the style and substance match perfectly.
Absolutely.
The intricacy of the story and the intricacy of the art complement each other.
Yes. the level of we talked about, the level of world building that's being done here requires, or and is definitely helped out immensely by the level of detail in the artwork, because you know this does feel like a lived-in ancient world.
And but conversely, Takeda, like while we talk about like all the beauty of her art, she can draw like some really horrific stuff too. You know, we were talking about the violence and everything. So yeah. It's not just when I say lush, you know, that's part of it. But then she can do some real blood and guts type stuff.
Yeah. Well, no, she can do grotesque fantastically. And yeah. And there's actually a beauty in that.
You know, it's not just, you know, Will of the Wisps, you know, flitting through the forests.
Right. No, there's actually a beauty in that, herself. In that horror. You know, a difficult thing to achieve.
And she pivots so well, like from panel to panel, depending on, again, it seems like it's one of those where the artist and the writer, just the symbiosis between the two is something that I just, you don't see very often. I mean, like you see it with like, say, Grant Morrison and Frank Quietly. You see it with Dave McKeon and Neil Gaiman to bring up some of those. Just the way that they work together is, it's really something special.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've talked about this on the program multiple times before, but when an artist and a writer are connecting in this way, you know, that's what makes comic books one of the most unique and original types of mediums, you know, that can tell a story that no other genre or medium can, because of that, I don't know what you want to call it, simpatico relationship. That's what makes comic books unique and wonderful, and why we're always on about it. You might even say it's some kind of a literary art fiction.
It's a magical realist literary art fiction.
Exactly. It would be very difficult for us to just go through the entire story. What I would really like is for our listeners to, if they haven't read this, go out and read it and just be overwhelmed by it. Because that's, you know, that's what happened to me. I heard about this. I saw some of the covers and I thought, yeah, this is really interesting looking. And then I picked up that first volume, that first trade. And my goodness, I was blown away by it. And I would like, you know, I don't want to take away that experience from someone.
Well, I think it's because the story is, this is an epic. You know, this is, you know, Ringworld or Ringworld. Shannara or...
It's Westeros.
Hickman and it's Westeros. It's some Hickman and Weiss's, you know, Dragonlance. You know, it's in that vein where this is, to hit on the individual points is hard. It especially this first volume, because everything is, again, world building. We keep saying world building, but everything in this is building towards a thing, and it's building towards a longer, more complicated story. So to distill it into pithy is difficult to do, but you know there are the story is it's full of again there's intrigue, there's I'm just repeating everything.
Exactly what we're trying to get at is there's a lot here, there's a lot of there, and you can't a little quick summary, like a Wikipedia page type of summary, is not going to do justice to this story at all.
And it feels like we're, you know, if it seems like we're being lazy on this particular episode, it's yes and no. Is it on purpose a little bit? Is it not on purpose? No.
Yeah, I think both of us are just trying to get you out there and read it. And if you have read it, I'd like to start a conversation on, you know, on Twitter or whatever, and have a, you know, and talk about the details. Because that's what this is all about. It's something that needs to be experienced, and not just, you can't just be told what's happening with this comic. I don't know if I'm getting this across. I recommend this one quite a bit.
as do I.
Yes. It's a good one, and I think everyone should be reading it. Unique works like this need to be supported. So I hope everyone goes out there and picks up a copy either of the trade or, you know, pick up some individual issues. Support good comics.
Indeed.
So are we done?
I think we're done.
Okay. All right. So Brian, what do we have coming up next time?
All right. So Paul, on the next thrilling adventure of the collected edition, we will be discussing Superman, Red Sun by Mark Miller and Dave Johnson.
Hey, Garth Ennis followed by Mark Miller. You're trying to kill me, right?
Oh, but yes. Two of your favorites. Red Sun is an interesting work. It's one of the few DC comics that Mark Miller has written.
I actually have. I've actually read this before, and it has a. As far as Mark Miller comics are concerned, this is one of the better comics of his.
Well, we'll see if we still do feel that way after we reread it.
You know what? I will be. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I don't think. When did this come out?
Oh, I want to say 2000, 2003, somewhere around in there.
Yeah, so that's when I read it. I liked it then.
It was a ways back. It was part of Elseworlds.
Yeah.
This is not our first Elseworlds comic.
I know. We did Gotham by Gaslight.
We did, yes. So anyway, I you know, for some reason, Rush has been on my mind lately.
Really? I can't figure out why.
I know, right? You know, I thought, what shall we read? And I was like, we haven't done Superman yet. And what's Superman with? There's another Superman that we certainly absolutely have to get to somewhere down the line. I feel that's going to have to be kind of an all-star podcast, let's say.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
I'll grant you that.
Oh, quite so.
Okay. But Red Sun, it actually is a very interesting premise, and it's a unique take on a superhero we think we know.
So that'll be next time.
Looking forward to it. Reading Red Sun again. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thanks for listening to us ramble yet again on the Collected Edition. Please, we'd love to hear your comments and what your feedback is. Please send us an email at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or hit us up on Twitter at CollectedEdPod. That's CollectedEdPod. Or how else can they get involved with us? Smoke signals? Skype. No, we don't want to do Skype. No one wants to look at us.
Tinder?
No, Tinder. No, I am not going to do Tinder. I have a little tender on Tinder.
Grindr?
I was just going with smoke signals.
Okay, that smoke signals work as well.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at CollectedEdPod. That's Collected, E-D-P-O-D. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Okay.
It's not that big of a deal. It's just what I was listening to it. I kept hearing click, click. What is that noise? And it took me a while to figure out. I think he's playing with his can. Which I heard you could go blind doing that.
I don't think it's your can. Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.